Welcome to American Indian Living, a program developed by the Native Education and Health Initiative to improve and enhance the health of people throughout the Native communities. American Indian Living is hosted by Dr. David DeRose, a board-certified specialist in both internal medicine and preventive medicine. Dr. DeRose has a wide range of experience with Native health issues, and he's ready today to help you learn more about your health. Here's Dr. DeRose.
Welcome to American Indian Living. I'm Dr. David DeRose. We're here today in another exciting venue. This is the first in a series of programs that we're broadcasting from the National Congress of American Indians. The year is 2015. We're in the exhibit hall in San Diego, California. Tribal leaders and other First Nation peoples from throughout the country and beyond are here for this annual gathering, and it's an exciting place to be. We've already been rubbing shoulders with many interesting folks. One of them is sitting right across from me. His name is Tom Johnston. Tom, it's great to have you with us.
Thanks, Dave.
Tell us a little bit about your tribal background.
I'm from northern Minnesota. Grandfather's from the Onagum area of the Leech Lake Reservation. My kids are enrolled with the Leech Lake Band of Minnesota Chippewa, and we're in the process of finalizing the enrollment of the grandchildren.
Wonderful.
So we live in, now we live in north central Wisconsin, and that's a little bit about that part of my background.
Okay, and so you're in a little bit different environment, even climate-wise?
Oh, yes, yeah. Central, north central Wisconsin, I think my son said it was going to be 28 above for the low, so we're expecting some frost on the ponds, which is going to fire those deer up. So,
okay.
You know, we're getting excited about that change of the season and getting the deer going.
Very good. And for those who are not familiar with NCAI, the event typically takes place in October. It is mid-October in 2015 while we're recording. Tom, now you've got a very interesting background. We could feature many things on this show today. You are a child psychologist, is that right?
That is correct.
And how long have you been doing that kind of work?
Pretty much ever since I retired from the military in 95.
Okay.
Started some programs specializing in mental health and children, and I've been doing it for the last 20 years.
Now, do you especially target Native youth in your work?
We'll help anybody that will come to us. Our target areas are kids. All of our children are in our main program. Our main program is called MACON. It means to find your path in Ojibwe. We target kids who have been treatment failures. So all our children have to be treatment failures historically, and they all have to be basically poor. So our primary funding source is Medicaid. So
okay.
We have Native kids, non-Native kids. Anybody that's been sexually or physically abused or abandoned, that's who we go for. That's our target population, and that's the kids that we want to help.
Now, what's so fascinating about your story, because I know just a little bit about it, is you've been out there on the front lines helping people who are going through all kinds of traumatic experiences. You're dealing with issues day in and day out as you work with these kids. But you yourself got some personal news that really was challenging for you not all that long ago. Can you tell us a little bit about that part of the story?
Certainly. The cancer came in my left eye actually about 5 years ago, Dave. And being retired military, I started at the VA system. And then I was, within 2 hours, transferred to the University of Minnesota. And I learned that that spot in the back of my cornea was something more serious than I had planned. So the first two VA docs were hesitant. They didn't really tell me. They wanted to have a cornea specialist to look at my eye and let me know what's going on. And I met a young gentleman, probably in his late 30s, and he just laid it right out there. He said, "You got cancer in your left eye, and we got to take your eye out. We're gonna have to take your vision, one way or the other." So within about a 20-25 minute period of time, we went from a normal vision screen to finding out this. And then he, and I was, of course, feeling pretty upset. But then he said, "If we don't do anything, you're going to die. This can take you out." And I said, "It's really strange, David. It just flipped for me." I said, "I got two eyes. When do you want to get working?" And he talked about what he would do and some of the approaches. And I said, "How many have you seen like me, though?" He said, "Three, being a young physician." Good guy. I said, "Do you know anybody that's seen more?" Huh. He said, "Well, you got to go to Mayo." So then I made a consultation at Mayo. They did the CTs, the MRI, see if it was any other place in my body. Because the type of cancer I have tends to come in the eye, but it likes the liver and the lungs.
So was this a melanoma?
It is, yes. Okay. Ocular melanoma.
Okay.
Yeah.
Uh-huh.
And for all of us that are out there hunting and fishing, native and non-native, maybe the atmosphere's changed a little bit, Dave. And there's more people getting. And I knew a little bit about it. My son and I had a neighbor, that young man, that got it. Mm-hmm. He got it in the spring, and he was buried in the fall. So I knew this was serious stuff.
Right, right.
So we went down to Mayo, had a great consultation, found that I was cancer-free except for in my left eye. Their approach was going to be the iodine patch. So basically they take your eye, they pull it out a little bit, turn it, they sew radioactive patches over the lesion. They put it back in, and you sit there for about a week, week and a half. And then when I was looking at the fine print of that, I realized that I had to sign a document that would keep me in that room. Mayo has a agreement with the state that when you're that radioactive, you can't leave your room.
Okay.
So the thought of having some radioactive material in my head for over a week didn't really sit too well with me. And I just happened to have a wonderful sister-in-law and brother that were researching for me. And they came up with the proton beam, which is proton versus gamma or iodine radiation. So one of the lessons I learned is that if we have a small lesion somewhere sensitive in our bodies, we've got to think about proton beam.
Where did you end up going for the proton beam?
MIT and Harvard.
Okay.
But I also learned something from talking with the physicians at Mayo, who are fantastic. But what I learned was they're going to give you the very best they have. But unless you know what other options out there, what they have may not be the very best. And when I mentioned proton beam, they said, "Man, that's very good. You can pick up another few percent. You're going to go from 50-50 to maybe 60%.
Okay.
So off to Harvard and MIT. And my son came out with me, and we met with the people and got a little cold feet right before that happened, because you just wonder, maybe I should just take the eye. Because
that's the standard, you know, the older therapy,
Older therapy. And we had a good physician. He said, "No way." Caught us in the hallway. Sonny and I were sitting down by the elevator. I was ready to pull up stakes. And Sonny is my son. And the doctor just happened to walk by. Creator put him by me, and he said, "I'm thinking about wondering if we should do this or not." He said, he kind of reacted like, "You're pretty crazy for not doing it. I can pick you up some percent. Plus, we take your eye out. We just put some metal markers around the lesion. You go home for a week and a half, and you come back, and we'll radiate it." And, you know, he's been doing 4,000 cases.
Of ocular melanoma?
He's done more ocular melanoma than anybody in the world.
Wow.
And he's a co-inventor of the proton beam machine, or one of the contributing people. So he was one of the greatest minds in this area. So with my son's support and his kind of getting on me a little bit, we decided to do it. We came back, and I had to warn the grandkids, though, because I said, "Grandpa's going to give the old red eye, because that eye was looking a little meaty when we got back to him." But then we came home, we went back out, got the radiation, and that radiation experience, of all the experiences that I've been through, was the least invasive. It was relatively easy to do. They fit you with a mask, they've got a little head, a little eye spot where you look out of. They do strap you down in a machine, and the machine is roughly about 200 feet long.
Okay.
And you're not sitting behind 1 foot of concrete, you're sitting behind 6 feet.
Wow.
And it's they're kind of funny. MIT guys are kind of funny, because they're kind of like, they remind me of that doctor on Back to the Future that I can't remember his name, but they don't have really any sense of humor at all. You know? And I did something kind of funny. I brought him some Wisconsin cheese. And I said, "Listen, fellas, if any one of you guys is going to want to cut the cheese, cut this. When I'm in there, I want you focused on me." And not one of them smiled.
Okay.
It was a funny deal. But anyway, they did their deal with me, and I had a nice run of about 4 years with cancer-free.
And they preserved your vision in that process?
No, I lost most of my vision.
Okay.
I still see light.
Okay.
And I still have my eye.
Uh-huh.
I don't have anything prosthetic.
Right, right. So, I mean, you look normal just to look at you.
Yeah. Uh-huh. If I look at you with my left eye, I won't see your face, but I'll see color around you, and I can still see light.
Which is more than you would have
Absolutely.
Had they taken your eye out.
Absolutely.
Right.
I was very, very impressed, and it was a good experience. But then since that, I knew if I was going to have another run with this thing, it was going to come back and come back hard.
Mm.
And so I spent about 4 years researching. What's going on? Trials. Mm-hmm. I talked with everybody from Sloan Kettering to Yale to you name it. People in Texas, people in Nevada.
Okay.
What do you have? What are the options? What's going on out there? And then this past April, I went in and passed a kidney stone. They found some things in my liver that's not supposed to be there. And, of course, then it's game on. So then you don't have a lot of time. My inclination was to go back out east, work with some of the physicians out there that are very, very good at working with.
Back at Harvard, MIT.
Harvard, MIT.
Mass General.
Mass General, all that group. Great guys and great gals. So we went back out there. And the news wasn't too good. Mm. I told the physician, I said, hey, I got my big boy pants on. You can level with me. And he did. He said, if we remove it surgically, you got a 10% chance it'll be cured. And you'll never get it back again. And then we can give you some PD-1 blockers, some immune enhancement treatments, and we can pick up another 15, 20%, something like that. So we're kind of sitting in that 30% range.
That's survival they're talking
That's
about.
Survival.
Disease-free survival.
Not necessarily disease. Well, survival.
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 Okay. Okay.
Yeah. In that ballpark.
Okay.
How long? As many people don't know, PD-1 blockers are new innovation. Not all the wrinkles are out of them. They are extending life over chemotherapy. But he was up front. He said chemo's not going to help you. So we went ahead and decided to do surgery, and he brought in a buddy of his from another university who's really specialized in liver surgery, cancer liver surgery. He was a great guy. Ken's his name. He came in on Saturday morning. He said, you're going to be my only patient.
Wow.
He tells my son, he says, if I'm out here in an hour, it's not too good. He's got more than two. I'll take out two, maybe three, but if it's more than that, I'm going to sew them back up. Kind of a funny thing along that line, too, was my son's cell phone stopped working, so he had no idea of time. So he's sitting on pins and needles waiting for me to come up. And I popped back out of there 4 hours later, and he was just an honest, hardworking guy and did a nice job.
Uh-huh.
We went back up and spent 2 days in the hospital.
So there were just a discrete number of metastases?
One larger one about the size of a ping pong ball, and then two smaller ones. One he thought might have been benign, but he took it out anyway.
Okay. So he took out three lesions from your liver.
Correct.
And thought he had pretty much gotten everything.
Correct. Uh-huh. Correct. Then we went up, spent 2 days in the hospital. He comes up the morning of the third day, says, you're getting out of here. I said, what are you talking about, Ken? You stay in here, you might get sick. You're not going home. My secretary's got you lined up in a pretty nice hotel. We're going to put you in there. You come back over here in a day. I'll check in. If you're still doing good, come back in a couple more days. I said, I can hardly stand up and walk. I said, you need to get out of here.
Hmm.
And he was concerned about infection and that
kind of thing.
Right,
right, right.
So once again, the guy that kind of went above and beyond, and we went down to the La Quinta, stayed there for a few days. My son kept a good eye on me, made sure I could get up and get to the bathroom and all that kind of stuff. We came home. But when I, in between this process, I was looking at out-of-the-box approaches to improve my immune system.
Uh-huh.
I just didn't feel like I felt comfortable sitting, waiting for 2 months for the next MRI CAT scan.
Okay, wow. Well, you've got us on the edges of our seats, Tom. And you're looking very good right now, but I gather there's some turns in this story that aren't all that encouraging. I'm Dr. David DeRose. You're listening to a show being recorded at the venue of the National Congress of American Indians. San Diego is where we're at. It's 2015 October. We've got a lot more exciting news coming up in our show. Don't go away. We will be right back.
Today's broadcast has been pre-recorded. However, if you have questions about today's show or would like further information, please call 1-800-775-HOPE. That's 1-800-775-4673. We'll be right back after this.
My name is Florence A.Q. For lunch today, I had grilled chicken and squash. I am Zuni Indian, and I have the power to prevent diabetes.
My name is D. Dakota Denesosi. I turned the TV off and took my nieces and nephews for a walk. We saw two jackrabbits, an eagle, and zero cartoons. I'm from the Dene Nation, and I have the power to prevent diabetes.
Science has proven that if we lose as little as 10 pounds by walking briskly for 30 minutes, 5 days a week, and make healthier food choices, we can prevent diabetes.
My name is Barbara Akisakup-Curtis. I'm losing weight and being more active. I am Alaskan Inupiaq Eskimo, and I have the power to prevent diabetes.
For more information on how to prevent diabetes, talk to your health care provider. For free materials, call the National Diabetes Education Program at 1-800-438-5383 and ask for the power to prevent diabetes. A message from the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services.
This is Meryl Streep. Over the years, I have played some characters you could call controlling, but the truth is, there's so much in life we can't control. But here's something we can. Colorectal cancer. It affects men and women, and it's the second leading cancer killer in the U.S., which is astounding considering it's almost entirely preventable. Here's how. Most colon cancers start as polyps, and screening helps find polyps so they can be removed before they even turn into cancer. Screening also finds this cancer early, when treatment works best. For me, screening was simple and quick. It was no big deal, except for the huge sense of relief you feel afterwards. There are several tests that you can choose from. If you're 50 or older, you should talk to your doctor. Decide which one's right for you. Take control. Do everything you can to prevent colon cancer. Screening saves lives. It could really save your life. For more information, call 1-800-CDC-INFO.
A message from the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services.
You're listening to Dr. David DeRose on American Indian Living. Your comments and questions are welcome. Call now at 1-800-775-HOPE. 1-800-775-4673. Here again is Dr. DeRose.
Welcome back to American Indian Living. I'm Dr. David DeRose. We are in the venue of the National Congress of American Indians. It's October of 2015. We're in San Diego, California. And I'm rubbing shoulders with people throughout Indian country. Across from me is a guest who began the show with me, Tom Johnston. Tom is a childhood psychologist by training, but he's sharing his own journey with cancer. If you're just joining us, Tom related how he was diagnosed about 5 years ago with ocular melanoma. Some of you may know of melanoma as normally appearing as a skin cancer, often a dark, irregular patch on the skin, but it can also occur in the back of the eye, known as the retina. Tom has been sharing how he got some state-of-the-art treatment for that, but in spite of that, the cancer returned. Tom, that's where we were. Your cancer had come back. It was discovered incidentally. I'm assuming you've been feeling fine this whole time.
Absolutely.
And so you ended up back at Mass General at Harvard and their system. Mm-hmm. You see a world-renowned surgeon who removes the cancer that has spread to the liver. There were two or three areas with cancer in the liver.
Yes.
And now, as the story was playing out, you left us having been transferred across the street, if you will, to a hotel.
Yes.
So what happened in that venue?
Well, my son babysat me for a whole 4 or 5 days, and we made the appointments, and we got the clear bill of health to travel, so I was able to get in the plane and come back to northern Wisconsin.
Okay.
And then the plan was to then do a MRI, CAT scan, see what's going on as a follow-up in a two-month period thereafter.
Mm-hmm.
And that didn't really sit too well with me.
You mean you thought you were waiting too long? Is that part of it, or
well,
what?
Part of it, but I didn't want to sit on my hands.
Uh-huh, uh-huh.
I wanted my immune system to fire up.
Okay.
So during this process, we did some research, investigations. My mother-in-law knew of someone that came down to a place in Tijuana, BioCare Hospital. BioCare Hospital.
Okay.
And we called some people that had been there. So I interviewed them over the phone. I guess you could call it an interview, but we talked about their journey. Mm-hmm. They were stage four. They had spreads. Mm-hmm. They were looking at short life expectancies. Mm-hmm. And there were two of them that had been alive over 10 years.
Wow.
And my life expectancy, they were talking 2 to 6 months there for a while. And so we called down to the hospital in Tijuana, BioCare, talked with Dr. Vasquez, and we made some arrangements, and I said, I'm going to go for it. Mm-hmm. So it was a three-week stay, and in that process, we did immune enhancement treatments. We did oxygen treatments, ozone 3 treatments, other things to enhance my overall well-being.
Okay.
Because I wanted to fight it throughout my body.
Now, had you shared details of this with the doctors at Harvard?
I did.
And what was their reaction?
Their reaction was, I was just up front with them, and I said, this is what I'm thinking about doing. What do you think? And he said, well, we don't necessarily support that or necessarily disagree with it, but I said, what the bottom line is anything I'm going to do down there going to affect what you want to do with me later on
if you need
to?
Okay, good question.
He said, no, go down there. I said, okay. We're going to go down there and bump up what we got, get back healthier nutrition, that sort of thing. Mm-hmm. So I came down and spent 3 weeks.
Now, again, when you went down there, you're feeling fine. Am I hearing you right
I'm feeling pretty darn good except for the sore liver.
Okay.
So I went down there real promptly. Mm-hmm. Maybe we were back maybe one or 2 weeks, maybe a couple weeks probably. And I didn't have any symptoms in my abdomen, and my eye was healed up, of course, by that time. Mm-hmm. But I just felt I just didn't want to sit on 10 to 30%. I wanted to do something else.
Right.
So we made that journey, and that experience put me in touch with a number of other people that come from America, Norway, Japan, all these different countries. That were down there for either autoimmune kinds of things, or they were down there for cancer or other types of things. Mm-hmm. And one of the nice things I liked about it was that you got out of your room when you got your treatments. So I could ask my neighbor, what are you doing? What happened to you? And there was this kind of sense of community. Mm-hmm. It was almost like a treatment circle. And we shared ideas, shared wisdom, shared experiences. Most of the folks down there had done the traditional big three.
Uh-huh.
You know, either radiation, chemo, or surgery.
Right.
One of the three, if not two, or if all three of the three.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
One guy from Oklahoma, him and his wife got in his car. They drove across the border without passports.
Really?
And just drove right in there and put the car. I said, Troy, how are you going to get home? I'll worry about that later on.
Huh.
And they just come in there and they got their passports while they were down there.
Wow.
And they just said, you know, we've done everything. We're just going to give this. We're going to give this a roll. We got to think outside the box.
Uh-huh.
And while I was down there, though, I couldn't do everything I wanted to.
What do you mean by that?
Well, one of the things I wanted to do was the hyperthermal treatments, mm-hmm. which is where they heat your body roughly to about 108 degrees. They keep your head cool.
And how do they do that?
They do that through a heat source under you, a heat source over you, but the primary heat source is an enema, a flowing heated enema. At one time, they used to do it through blood, but it created too many difficulties.
I see.
So they heat you internally. You're heated. They gradually heat you, and then they keep you at 108 for about an hour and a half, 2 hours, and they gradually decrease your heat.
So how are they measuring your temperature? Just curious.
You're under general. You're in a surgical suite.
Oh, okay.
So you don't know.
And your head is packed in ice, or
your head is above. Your head is above the heat sources.
I see.
And your abdomen and your internal organs are what heated.
Okay.
Internally.
Uh huh.
So I thought about. To be honest with you, I thought about misleading that doctor down there.
What do you mean, misleading him?
I had a plan. I woke up. I said, because of the fact that during that 2-3 week period, other patients who had survivors who had been alive for 6, 8, 10 years were coming and telling their story. And they're all getting, I met five of them, and they were all saying, Tom, you got to do it.
Oh, get this hyperthermia.
You got to get the hyperthermia. Uh-huh. You've got to add that because that's what saved me. There was a Hutterite woman from northern Alberta that put her little crooked finger right in my face and said, get it done. And she walked off.
But they had not offered you that option? Was that the deal?
Here's the problem.
Uh-huh.
Too close to surgery.
The
liver would have imploded. So the morning of my deceit, when I was going to go deceive that doctor, now I hadn't bled in about a week, week and a half. I looked down at the towel, and of course I had blood all over in the towel. One of the suture areas on the external part of my abdomen, belly, had opened up. So I said, thank you. So I did just the immune sort of things, everything I could. I came back up to the States, did the MRI, did the CAT scan, got a clean bill of health. I was one of the 10%er. No spread, no sign, no evidence. Come back 3 months, we'll do it again. And so this summer, I had a wonderful summer, just a great summer. But I was continuing to research, stay keeping in contact, and I knew, for the most part, most of the Western medicine made me feel like Dorothy on The Wizard of Oz.
What do you mean by that?
You remember the end of that movie where they finally find the wizard, and he's behind this big castle. He's got all these robes, and he's got these image projectors, and he's got his voice booming. And here he's this tiny little man. And the lion, the scarecrow, and the tin man are getting their awards and their clock for the heart and the diploma for the scarecrow. And Dorothy's standing there. And Dorothy says, but what do you got for me? And I thought to myself, I feel like Dorothy. I've got chemo, I got radiation, I got surgery. And I've already done two. And I knew there were limits to what I could get from most Western medicine.
So basically the sense was they really didn't have much for you.
I knew there wasn't a lot. Mm-hmm. But I had to, I really felt the need because they were now beginning to get into the PD-1 blockers. The U.S. pharmacies were starting to look into and support autoimmune enhancement kinds of things. And I met just so many wonderful physicians that would go out of their way many times for me. And I had a very trusted one or two, and I wanted to make sure that I stayed in touch with that. So then we had a good summer. Started feeling kind of odd, though, in late August.
By odd, can you put
sick
your finger
to the stomach,
on it?
Sick to the stomach, a little loss of appetite. I knew I was kind of sick. I was in correspondence with BioCare, correspondence out east. Both were giving me insights. We were watching it. We had things set up for MRI, CAT scans in September. We had a big family gathering over Labor Day. I always play softball with my boy.
That was a tough time. Just to recap, Tom Johnston sharing his story about this really tough battle with cancer. And we appreciate you just sharing from the heart with our listeners. So Labor Day weekend, we're there with you.
Yeah, we had a good family gathering. Saw a lot of old friends, got up to Duluth Cloquet, and had a wonderful, wonderful weekend.
Okay, but I think there's something more coming. We got to step away, but I'm not going away. You got us engaged. I'm listening to Tom Johnston tell his story, walking us through a journey of natural and conventional therapies for cancer. There's hope for you. That's the message. Stay tuned. We'll be back with more on today's edition of American Indian Living.
American Indian Living will continue in a moment. If you have questions or comments about today's pre-recorded broadcast, please call 1-800-775-HOPE. That's 1-800-775-4673.
I'm Karen, and two very important people in my life, my husband and my father, have been diagnosed with atrial fibrillation. Atrial fibrillation, or AFib, is a type of irregular heartbeat. People with AFib are 5 times more likely to have a stroke than people without AFib. Talk with a healthcare professional today about your risk. and learn how to manage AFib to prevent a stroke. Visit stroke.org/AFib to learn more.
Did you know that 63% of homes contain allergens from cockroaches? And that mice spread potent asthma triggers found in 82% of homes? It's true. Common household pests are major offenders on the list of indoor allergens. Learn what you can do to help your family breathe easier. Visit pestworld.org. A public service message from the National Pest Management Association and the Asthma and Allergy Foundation of America.
You're listening to Dr. David DeRose on American Indian Living. Your comments and questions are welcome. Call now at 1-800-775-HOPE. 1-800-775-4673. Here again is Dr. DeRose.
You're back with Dr. David DeRose and with basically the ambiance of National Congress of American Indians being held in October 2015 in San Diego, California. A lot of activity around here, from Native music to folks gathering around. And one of the more surprising auditory experiences that you're getting in the show, if you've never been to NCAI, is that we have a group just across from us. They're the Native Nation Events Group, and they've actually got, what do you call that there, that wheel that they're spinning?
Roulette.
A roulette wheel?
Yeah.
Does that sound like the real thing?
It does.
Okay, well, if you're hearing that clicking in the background, now it's they're really not gambling there. They're giving away gifts to those who visit their booth, and I guess you determine which gift you get by where that spinner lands. So that's that clicking noise that you hear in the background. So we thought we'd just kind of give you the heads up if some of you are wondering about that unusual sound experience. In fact, later in this series, we hope to get some of the folks from Native Nation Events with us. But we're back with Tom Johnston. Tom, we've been following you for the past 5 years, in a sense. You get this diagnosis of ocular melanoma. In other words, there's a cancer in the back of the eye. It's treated with a high-tech procedure, the proton beam that you receive there at MIT, Harvard system. And you're doing great for 4 years, then incidentally found to have liver metastases. The cancer is spread to the liver. Get that surgically addressed. And now we've fast-forwarded already just a couple of months ago where you're at a family gathering. Mm-hmm. It's Labor Day weekend, and what mm-hmm. happened there that really got your attention?
Well, I knew I was getting weaker, knew I was getting tired. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. I was losing weight. We finished the tournament. We had a great time, great family gathering.
This was a softball tournament.
Softball tournament, yeah. Our team placed, actually, and that's a lot when you got guys my age. I'm 64 years old.
Wow.
And we're playing with young guys, and the young guys had to carry us pretty heavy. I'm sure their backs were pretty sore. But we got through that tournament. We had just a remarkable time, family uh-huh. gathering, sisters, cousins, you name it. It was a great gathering. And after that, then I knew I was getting sicker. Mm. And we had some deer stands to get up. My son okay. surprised me with a new deer stand. We had some lines to cut and some things to do. So I didn't move up my MRI CAT scan. I left it where it was.
Uh-huh. And when it was scheduled for when?
Mid-late September.
Okay.
I think it was scheduled on the 22nd.
Okay.
22nd, 23rd, whatever that Monday, Tuesday
uh-huh.
was.
Uh-huh.
So we went ahead and did that, MRI, CAT scans. And then I had an appointment back at the VA, my local VA doc, who I'd known for 20 years or when I retired in 95. He's been my doc ever since. Good guy, likes me, treats me well. So we had that set up for Thursday. I had requested a next day mail from the VA in St. Paul of mm-hmm. the results. They sent the results. I got them Wednesday afternoon. Or actually, I read them Wednesday morning. And then I had let my son and my wife know that they weren't good.
Mm.
So it jumped back in the liver, jumped back in my lower spine,
wow.
jumped between my shoulder blades, maybe a sod on a kidney. So I was in trouble, big trouble. So I went and kept that doctor's appointment.
Okay.
And George is a good guy. And his head was down when I walked in there. And I knew he was emotional. And I said, George, I know. I said, you got anything for me? And he said, I'll give you all the pain meds you need. And the nurse said, she took my hand, I said, I'll pray for you. And while this was going on, I really wasn't 100% on front with my family. But I was checking out my options. And so once we had that meeting, we went over my options. It was going back out east conventional, or we're going to go south and go non-conventional. And I left that weekend. I landed in Tijuana on Monday, back to BioCare. During this time period, I had talked out east, and the docs out there said, can you give me a month? No, you got to get out here in 3 weeks. Don't wait more than 3 weeks. We want you out here. 2 weeks preferred. And when I landed there, those guys were so good to me. They called me, tracked me down in Tijuana.
The Harvard folks.
Another respected, world-renowned cancer treatment facility.
Oh, okay, okay.
They said, where are you? Tijuana. I said, what are you doing? I said, I'm trying to kill this thing. I said, these PD-1s will push it back, but I want to kill it. I want a chance to knock it out of me. I said, again, I said, what do you got for me? He said, we got 15 to 20% that you can push this back. Instead of living 6 months, you might live 11 months. We got some pretty good odds here. I'm thinking these aren't very good odds to me.
No, no.
In fact, every time I ask what my odds are, they keep getting worse.
Yeah.
But anyway, they were not worse. I'm sorry.
No, but I mean,
it's startling kinds of.
No, but I mean, I hear what you're sharing, and maybe I should let our listeners know something, and that is the reason you and I met is while I was getting the booth set up here at National Congress, I ran into another Native American gentleman who actually had been at the same facility, at this BioCare facility. And he said, Dr. DeRose, you've got to interview Tom, because I saw this guy when he walked in. I don't know if even if he didn't act like he even walked into the facility. He said you were looking really bad.
I went from about 175 down to about 145, 140.
Wow.
I was gaunt, and I was sick.
Yeah, he said you looked terrible.
I was real sick.
Uh-huh.
Real sick. And what are the odds of running into another Native guy, Tijuana, in a cafeteria, and I'd come out of that room when I got that phone call, and I'll tell you this, those East Coast guys, doctors, well-meaning, but they shook me.
Huh.
They got me thinking, and I was there alone the first 2 days. I came up to the cafeteria and see this guy there, Bob, and Crater must have sent him there. He told me one of his stories, told me some other stories. And I called back out east. I said, I'm staying here. And we worked out an arrangement to do my follow-up at Mayo to do the MRI and CAT scans. But Bob was kind of a tipping point. And then my daughter-in-law came down, who's now got promoted to be a daughter. She came down right before the first hyperthermia. And then my son and daughter come down for the second hyperthermia, and my wife came down for the third.
Okay, so now you're getting these fever treatments where they're raising your body temperature up to 108.
We worked on throwing about a half a dozen things at this thing.
Uh-huh.
Pancreatic enzymes, supposed to take the shell or make the cancer cells more vulnerable. Low-dose chemo, 5 days oral. So we mixed in some traditional because that would help with my bone, because when it gets in your bone, it creates holes in your bone. It's not going to knock me out. It's not going to kill me right away, but you don't want it there either.
Painful.
Painful. Yeah, painful. The main objective is the liver, to knock it out of the abdomen. So then there's also the Olivosados. It's an immune enhancement thing that helped me get that clean bill of health the first time. Nutrients, supplements, lots of natural things. But the big thing that I was really looking forward to is the hyperthermia. And most people get two. We did three.
Okay.
We're gonna give it everything we got.
And tell us again how long that treatment lasts.
It's about a four-hour procedure.
Uh-huh.
So they bring you into a surgical suite. You have an anesthesiologist. You have a physician. You have an RN. It takes about 4 hours to do the treatment.
Uh-huh.
And then you have a nurse right at your bedside. You're on oxygen. You have your IVs, of course. And then they monitor you. your heart and everything like that. And that's about first 4 hours are pretty intense monitoring, and then they're with you pretty intense for almost the entire day. One of the things I kind of liked about it also, they always have a physician spend the night in the hospital.
Oh, okay.
Right.
Someone's
down the hallway.
Always available.
MD right down the hallway.
Uh-huh.
So we got some good follow-up. After that, you're pretty, that day is pretty much gone. Next day, you're affected. It took me maybe about 3 days. And today, after my last thermo was last Thursday, I'm feeling pretty good. I feel like I'm almost there, almost crisp, almost sharp. But we have to remember, had chemo, had a lot of other things going on.
Yeah,
it was just this hypothermia. I threw everything I could at it to get the most out of this 3 weeks. And I got out of the hospital yesterday.
And you were there for how long?
3 weeks, 20 days.
And from what Bob mentioned, the fellow that introduced us, he said you look like a different man. Are you feeling that much better?
I do. I can still feel the lower back and the shoulder from time to time. And we have a plan for that. We're going to address that. We can get this stopped. We're going to address it with some of the medication they give for osteoporosis to fill in those spots.
Okay.
I put on some weight. I'm about 151 pounds fighting weight now.
Okay.
I'm eating. I got my appetite.
Tremendous.
I get tired, but I got to remember what I put myself through. And I did maybe more than maybe some did with the effort of defeating this. I don't want to be carrying. I want to try to knock it out. And so it was a different kind of hospital experience. My kids could sleep in the same room with me. I had one on each side of me. My daughter-in-law, who now I said is promoted to daughter. And once I promoted her to daughter, she bosses me around all the time. And then my wife come down, and we could hold hands. And they fed my family, and they included them. So the 3 weeks, believe it or not, as much as I miss my grandchildren, it went by pretty fast because I was busy from about 7 in the morning to about 3 in the afternoon with oxygen treatments and other kinds of innovative things that are more natural or homeopathic. So those weeks went by relatively fast. Now, my son came down. He says, I look better. My wife says, you look like you're like 10 years younger.
Wow.
I was shocked. She must have been wearing the wrong glasses. But she complimented me, and I feel better. I definitely know I'm stronger, and I've got more energy, but I also know I can no longer be the red squirrel. I got to be a turtle. I got to go slow.
Okay.
Follow these follow-ups. And one of the things that excites me is we're going to follow it up with some other vaccines to instill more energy into my white blood cells. And we're going to, they're called dendritic cell vaccines. So I started on those. You get a shot once a week. And what the dendritic cells, the theory there is that they are stronger white blood cells.
Okay. You know, I'm wanting to be sensitive. We've got one more segment. We're just about finished with this one. Are we putting you through too much? Are you able to hang by for another 10 minutes?
I'm here.
Okay. Listen, we have got to step away just for a little bit. We're going to be coming back with Tom Johnston. In our closing segment, we're going to talk about some encouraging news for you if you're dealing with serious illness. Tom has been gracious enough to share his journey. We will be back with more in today's edition of American Indian Living. Don't go away. Dr. David DeRose and Tom Johnston, we will be back together. Stay tuned.
Today's broadcast has been pre-recorded. However, if you have questions about today's show or would like further information, please call 1-800-775-HOPE. That's 1-800-775-4673. We'll be right back after this.
What I say, you already know, but you don't believe. You won't accept, you don't conceive. When you're inside your car, you feel safest of all. Are you safe? Are you? 2 tons of sheet metal in your hands. 2 tons don't run on autopilot. You have a mission. It's no collision. Hold the phone. Don't text. You're angling to be next. Oh, you've done it before. What's the harm? Just this once. There's no alarm. Got your hands on the wheel? No big deal. Brothers and sisters, you won't see it coming. You're off the road. Your life explodes. It's not worth it. Don't do it. You only think there's nothing to it. Put it down. Hang up. Pay attention to highway action. Behind the wheel, there is no such thing as a small distraction. Join the conversation at DecideToDrive.org, a public service message from the American Academy of Orthopedic Surgeons, who would rather help keep your bones strong than put them back together.
We are here to say a word about cancer.
When you talk to someone who has been diagnosed with cancer,
be positive.
Be supportive.
That's it. Stop right there.
Don't start telling them about your Uncle Vern.
Or the next door neighbor.
Don't be grim.
Try not to disappear either.
Don't cross to the other side of the street.
Don't stop calling.
Don't cry.
Don't ever say, you're living my worst nightmare.
You know who you are.
Here's the important part.
Be positive.
Be positive.
Sé positivo.
Say these words.
You will do great.
Keep calling.
Check in.
Be a friend.
Or be a new friend.
Be a supportive.
Positive friend.
Smile.
Try not to be afraid.
Or act afraid.
Fear is not useful.
Be a funny, hopeful human being.
If you come across cancer,
let it transform you into your most positive self.
And inspire.
Urge.
Fortify.
Rally.
Encourage someone to do great.
This message brought to you by Cancer Survivors.
For more information, to hear stories, or share your own, visit DoGreatCampaign.com. Do great.
You're listening to Dr. David DeRose on American Indian Living. Your comments and questions are welcome. Call now at 1-800-775-HOPE. 1-800-775-4673. Here again is Dr. DeRose.
You're back for our final segment of today's edition of American Indian Living. Dr. David DeRose sitting across from Tom Johnston. Tom is Ojibwe. He's from Wisconsin. He's a child psychologist by training, but he's been on his own journey, if you've been with us from the beginning of the hour, sharing his story about cancer. And really, Tom, I hear it as a story of hope, and that's why we have you here, because a lot of people weren't giving you a lot of hope, and yet you kept going. You've been exploring things, and you've been seeing results in your life. Mm-hmm. What's planned for you as far as the future?
Okay. As you know, Dave, I just got out of the hospital yesterday. I extended my stay down here in San Diego for a couple of days to attend this with my son. And the game plan is Mayo Clinic is going to do the MRIs, CAT scans Tuesday after next mm-hmm. of next week. And at that option, then if the tumors are the same size or slightly smaller, we're going to push it back and do some more testing.
Okay.
If there's shrinkage, we're going to stay the course and continue the work that I started at BioCare. If they're worse, then we got to look at the PD-1s and we got to look at those other options that might have more side effects or consequences, but still give me a chance to continue to be on this earth. Mm-hmm,
mm-hmm. I mean, I'm listening to your story, and I think there's a number of take-home lessons. One of them goes all the way back to your diagnosis, because you had no symptoms. Did you have vision loss? Was that what prompted you to see the eye doctor?
I had a slight blurred vision in the center of my vision in my left eye, so there's a slight blurring. Mm-hmm. So I scheduled that exam.
Okay. But some people, depending on where such a lesion would be, may not have any symptoms.
Correct.
And so one of the messages really is sometimes having symptoms, of course, can be life-saving.
Yes.
But the other message is when it comes to eye issues, sometimes things can be silent, whether it's a cancer like an ocular melanoma, whether it's glaucoma, macular degeneration, diabetic changes in the eye. All of this really argues for us to have regular eye screening, right?
Absolutely. I make sure those eyes are dilated and examined by a competent professional.
Excellent.
You nearly need to make sure you're looking at your eyes, because you're right. The neighbor that passed so quickly, mm-hmm. he didn't have any symptoms. Mm. And they didn't know where it started. They backtracked from the liver back to the eye. So they reversed it. If he would have had some vision loss or any kind of vision impairment, he might have had a better shot. So we absolutely have to dilate that eye and get that examined on a routine, regular basis, I think, because it's a very sneaky, insidious kind of cancer. It doesn't leave markers, doesn't leave trails, and it's aggressive.
Okay, well, thanks for that important message. So there's a message about early diagnosis and treatment, but there's also a message about what do we do when we get bad news. You're a psychologist. You've dealt with lots of people who've gotten bad news. Mm-hmm. You've been through that several times now in your own journey. Mm-hmm. What kind of encouraging words do you have for those who might be listening now with maybe a bad diagnosis that they're facing?
For me, Dave, I think sometimes it's tempting to keep that to yourself. Mm. Bring your family in.
Okay.
Give them the news. Keep them involved. Allow them to help you. It's a great gift.
I appreciate you mentioning that, and let me tell you why. It wasn't all that long ago I had a patient in my office sharing about a family member, I think it even was a parent, mm-hmm. who had passed away, and they were actually quite resentful that the parent had never shared that they had a terminal illness. Mm-hmm. The parent thought they were sparing their family from pain, but really it only in the long run added to the pain of the family because they weren't able to help the family member go through it. I mean, they saw the person deteriorating, and they kept, you know, denying that anything was wrong. So I appreciate that very important message.
Good. I think it's so important because they want to help. And in my case, it was my sister-in-law and brother. Basically, my sister-in-law found out a proton beam.
Okay.
I would not have known that. There's only about four or five machines in the whole country. Mm-hmm. How are you going to know that? Also, my mother-in-law, knowing about some people who came down to BioCare. I would have never known about that. Mm-hmm. It's a small little hospital in Tijuana. How would I know that? So by bringing everybody in and getting more advocates, mm-hmm. and that's one of the other things I think, you got to be outspoken. You got to ask tough questions. You got to get information. You got to be assertive. One of the things my son does is he's assertive.
Okay.
You know, when we're in meeting with the docs and they're going through everything, you got to have another set of ears. I even tape recorded some because there's so much information. But when you're sick, when you're tired, sometimes you don't have that extra energy. So bringing the family in is critical, and giving them opportunities to be of assistance is important because then you don't feel so alone. And they feel like they're helping you through that journey.
Uh-huh.
And they encourage you, and you encourage them.
Excellent, excellent. Now, I know already you've been a source of encouragement because that was the context in which I met you. You know, when someone sees someone with a bad diagnosis looking bad and it seems like they've turned the corner, I mean, we don't know what the future is, and I know some of the naysayers will be listening. They said, well, you've got him right after his treatment and all, and you know, who knows how he'll be doing tomorrow. I mean, none of us know how any of us will be doing tomorrow, right? But what we do know is, I mean, this was someone, you know, with no bias. I mean, he's just saying, Dr. DeRose, Tom Johnston is here at this venue. I just met the guy. He's got an amazing story. So from someone who, I'll tell you, Tom, be honest with you. A lot of times when people hear about a bad diagnosis, their initial reaction is to feel pity or, you know, sorrow. But now people are, you know, encouraged about what's happening in your life. How does that make you feel?
Appreciate it. But I just hope I can encourage them, as you said. And I'm certainly no hero. I'm just a guy trying to get through this the best he can and looking at all the options. But if it does reach out to one person, gives them something else to consider, opens their mind, gives them opportunities that they wouldn't consider, I'm very happy about that.
We have to talk about one other thing at least, and it's this. Many times when people get bad news, they give up hope. And we've seen it in many settings. I mean, it may be something as seemingly innocuous to a health professional as a diagnosis of diabetes. Mm-hmm. And when that diagnosis is given to a young Native person, they may in their mind's eye see, you know, Auntie who was on dialysis and had her amputations and all. And to them, it's a death sentence.
Yes.
Now, not everyone reacts that way. But most people, when they hear the word cancer, even if it's a highly treatable cancer, it's very easy to slip into despair.
Yes. Absolutely.
Can you speak to that issue for us?
It is easy, I think. And I think everybody has their own personal journey when they get that diagnosis. Mm-hmm. And I've had family members talk about other family members who took a different path with it. But they did the very best with what they had, with the information they had. And they had to cope with it in their own way. Mm-hmm. But for me, I didn't want to take it laying down. And I encourage the listeners to, if you get a bad diagnosis, get your energy as up as best you can. Mm-hmm. Do all you can to stay healthy and learn as much as you can. And I've even involved friends who wanted to be part of this journey.
Okay.
And they could research. They could look. They could come up with things. And their support is huge. Mm-hmm. Friends, family, our creator. Mm-hmm. And one of the things is, for me, flute music. Mm. Bob gave me... He went out and got me some music.
Okay.
And I use that to use my imagery to slow your mind down, because your mind speeds up. You're mm-hmm. always thinking, what can I do? How is this going on? Is this better? Is this... To be able to calm your mind, to be able to focus on the Creator, to be able to focus on your imagery, seeing your body fight this cancer was powerful for me.
Tremendous. Tom, I know you've been through a lot lately. Thank you for taking time and hanging in there. I know we talked at the last break whether you felt you had the energy to go through. Thanks for hanging in there with us.
Thank you, Dave.
Listen, we're stepping away from today's show, but I've been inspired by Tom Johnston and his story of dealing with cancer. I don't know what you're dealing with today. It may be a bad diagnosis you've gotten, maybe challenges at a tribal level, maybe in your own home. But Tom's message is don't look at the bleakest possible outcome. Look with hope at the future. There's people around to help you. There are resources often that you are unaware of. And as he pointed out, there is a Creator who's willing to take you by the hand. Hopefully that message resonates with you. As always, I'm Dr. David DeRose, wishing you the very best of health.
This is Life Talk Radio.